Welcome back, folks, to Recommended Daily Dose. I am Dr. Clinton Coleman with the Soul Glow, along with Dr. Sharad Sugar with the Anti-Soul Glow.
Anti-Soul Glow. Keeping the hair short, that's right.
We're happy to have someone with a nice full head of hair, Mr. Logan Trudell. He is a former trauma ICU nurse, turned burnout specialist, burnout reduction specialist, actually, and founder of Healthcare Stress Relief, a company built on the premise of providing support and resources for healthcare professionals currently experiencing compassion fatigue and burnout with the aim of preventing and healing from it. So that sounds like us. So welcome, Logan.
Thanks for having me.
I'm going to jump right into it because we are realizing that you are not, even though you're from California, you are actually down in Medellin, in South America, in Colombia. So tell us a little bit of how you ended up over there.
Yeah, so when I became an ICU nurse, I was really stoked because as a new grad to even get that position, it's a big deal. And I really enjoyed the profession. There was some bullying and toxicity going on in the previous hospital I was at. So I moved to level 2 trauma center, and that was like my dream job. And I started to notice a skin condition, eczema, that I had when I was a kid come back up, and it started to get really bad, and I had like topical steroid withdrawal. My eyes were getting puffy. I was going to all these doctors. They were telling me I was basically going to have to live with it for the rest of my life. My soul told me that they were wrong. And so I started to see like functional medicine doctors, NAET doctors, just trying everything really. And nothing still helped. And then in October 2019, I walked into work and heard the news that my coworker Brian had committed suicide. And around that time, I was pretty much making a plan to get out and try and figure out what was going on with my life. December 31st, 2019, I left the profession and then bought a one-way ticket to Medellin, Colombia, where I am now.
Wow. So in how many years did you practice before, coming to this kind of conclusion or this epiphany, that you got to do something else with your life?
It was roughly 2 years. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Well, this is really relevant. I think Clinton can dive into this, but him and I being on the front lines with COVID-19, I think there's a lot of healthcare providers, doctors, nurses, and others who probably feel very much in your shoes. So I'm sure, you started this issue of kind of reducing burnout, toxicity. You mentioned bullying in healthcare, which we certainly see. I imagine that your services are even more so and you're more demand now after COVID-19 or as COVID-19, at least in our area, recedes. I know in South America, it's still quite prevalent with the new Delta variant circulating widely, but can you tell us a little bit about how COVID-19 kind of affected? Because I feel like this is a very common theme in medicine. It doesn't matter if you're a trauma surgeon, trauma nurse, infectious disease doc, nephrologist like Dr. Coleman. I mean, this affected all of us, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely comes in waves because like at the brunt of it, when everything was crazy, no one could really feel anything because you have so much adrenaline in your system all the time. And you don't really feel anything until you either step away from the environment or somebody kind of pokes a pain point that maybe you're not as healthy as you once thought you were. And for me, I was walking into the hospital like I was the patient. Like I had snake skin pretty much. Yeah, for the healthcare providers now, it's kind of as things are starting to ease off, right, people are starting to feel again, and the feeling isn't good.
So even like something like but prior to COVID, trauma and ICU is pretty rigorous. You would expect a majority of the people working there would have some kind of burnout, just being there nonstop and seeing all the trauma. You think it's something that's missing in as far as education? Or, I guess the question is, should we, I find that people tend to wait too late to realize that they're burnt out, but we're not really taught on how to deal with it during training, whether it's nursing school or medical school. You think something that's missing? Was that in your training, or do you think that's something that needs to be implemented?
I think more and more people are waking up to it. I had probably one lecture on it, but you don't really understand how devastating it can be until you get into the workplace. And as a new graduate, I don't know what it was like when you guys were residents, but I think you guys talked about this with Jamal. When I walked into the workplace, I'm all smiley and happy and giddy. And some of my coworkers are like, oh, in a couple of years, you won't be that way anymore.
Yeah, there's a lot of pessimism. You know, you walk in very optimistic. And we spoke to Jamal in detail about this, but in medicine, especially when we practice, because we are a little bit older than you, you know, it was like, you know, it was like big boys don't cry or big girls don't cry. You just do it. You know, no, you don't complain. So I know you mentioned bullying in that, and I'd seen some of your posts about bullying in healthcare. So I was wondering if you could touch upon that.
The more I dive into it, the more I come from a more empathetic place to the bullies, right? Because at the end of the day, a lot of bullies, when I was in high school, I would do it to protect myself from being bullied by other people. Sure, sure. But a lot of people are just, they're so stuck in a reality that they don't like that they're projecting that onto somebody else by being an asshole. And right. So once you understand that, you don't take it as personally. And then you can have a more direct conversation with that person. For me, a lot of the issues I had was I wasn't assertive enough. I didn't even know what it was. And I let people walk all over me. I didn't have boundaries. I didn't know my needs.
But it's also understood that it's the culture of the hospital. Like it's a rite of passage, you know, culture as far as medicine, doctors, yeah, during residency.
Right.
You have your attending or your chief resident, and you're treated a certain way and you're supposed to brush it off. And I'm assuming it works like when you're first starting nursing, you'll have like the head nurse and, you know, it's like the scut. I don't know if you remember the term scut. It's like they call it the scut monkey, which was very derogatory.
Wasn't that your nickname? That was your nickname. Was that my nickname?
That's Mr. Scut.
You were Mr. Scut. I was a brown shirt. Yeah. No, but I think you're saying basically, let's be frank, shit rolls downhill, right? And
right.
Same thing in medicine, yeah. Chief resident all the way to third year med student. And I'm sure nursing, you have your quote unquote nurse ratchet. You have the ICU nurse, you have the nurse trainee. And I've seen it firsthand where some of the nurses can be a little, you know, with their new trainees. And like Clint mentioned, I think we were taught that's just the culture of medicine. And, you know, you just don't complain. But, you know, you mentioned before now that doctors getting burnout, nurses getting burnout, the degree of compassion drops. I think we realize that that is not the, perhaps the really, that old system no longer works in today's world.
Yeah. One of the big things you guys talked about with Jamal was one of the pain points I heard from you guys is like the system is not working. Right. And so part of the work I'm doing is like, I want to help patch up the wounded, but at the end of the day, that's not sustainable. Like if we just keep going to war, we're going to have a lot of wounded people. And unfortunately, the wounded people are the people that we need to care for our sick. So how is that going to work?
Right.
Yeah. You know, one thing I've seen, and I think Clinton sees the same thing is, you know, we work very closely with our nurses, whether it's the nephrology nurses and the dialysis nurses with Clinton, with me, a lot of like, you know, infectious disease nurses, chronic trach units, et cetera. But we're seeing a mass exodus, at least I am, of nurses trying to go leaving clinical medicine, right? And going into transitional care, you know, quality control. I mean, anything but, and they'll tell me, hey, doc, you know, I need to do anything but patient care, bedside care. Even though that's why I went into nursing, that's what I'm training for. And that's a problem. I mean, I understand like 20, 30 years into your career, you know, you're burnt out or you're tired or physically can't move patients. I mean, I know ICU care is very physically demanding, but it's amazing to me that people are feeling that way very early on in the career and looking for an exit. The same thing happens in medicine with physicians, et cetera. So like you said, that system certainly, I don't think is working anymore, but tell us kind of like how you help people. Like what exactly, I know you're hanging out in collaboration. I shouldn't say hanging out. Your spiritual journey, which I think Clint and I need to take our own spiritual journey somewhere. I want to take him to India.
I'll go to Colombia.
I want to take you to India, you know, or somewhere else. So we'll go where, you know, once COVID thankfully has improved dramatically there, but I think he needs some peace, you know, in his life. He looks a little ragged sometimes and he projects onto me his stress. So, but tell us like, you know, now you're there, how long you've been there, what you're doing down there, you know, et cetera.
Yeah. I've been here for a year and I'd say like 3-4 months. I had an epiphany one day that this was the work I needed to be doing. When I first got here, I just knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I just didn't know how.
Yeah.
And then I had the epiphany and really kind of processed Brian's death and realized I want to prevent that in other healthcare workers, because you guys know suicide rates are higher in healthcare professionals.
Right.
Yeah. And yeah, what I do, like I have the Bye Bye Burnout program. That's a program for healthcare professionals, particularly nurses. And we basically help them love themselves more so they can I think one of the foundations of not being able to provide the self-care is wounds from when you're younger. And so like, if you can't assess and assert your needs in the workplace, oftentimes that comes from when you're younger. And
so you mean not related to your time as a nurse? You're talking prior to that.
Because I couldn't talk to doctors the way I'd be able to talk to them now if I was a nurse, because I wasn't confident in that area.
Right.
And so once you can kind of build a stronger foundation, then we go over all the self-care in the program after that. But we got to first understand where our limiting beliefs are that are holding us back.
It's interesting when you look at other careers, like whether it's business or I don't know if they do this in legal, but you know, there's things like retreats and there's team building and there's things that people do for self-preservation. We don't really do that in medicine, right? It's interesting to me that the people who need it most aren't really focusing on their mental and spiritual health.
Yeah, but one would argue we're too busy taking care of patients, right? Which is not productive or helpful for neither us taking care of patients in the long run or our own well-being, right? So how do you find that balance, Logan?
It starts with taking responsibility of your health and realizing whatever system that you're in, if you don't have enough time, you did choose that avenue. Well, something I want to talk about with you guys is like you spent probably one of the few careers that you have that much schooling and then you get out. What was it like for you? Was it when you got out, you're like super happy because now you're a doctor, or is it, oh my God, what have I gotten myself into? Cause I have a coworker who he's been a doctor for 6 years and he's just trying to get out of debt and then he's going to escape.
Yeah. I'll answer the question first and Clinton may have a different perspective. I'll just say that, you know, my parents are physicians. I knew what I was getting myself into because I did see it. So I knew that this was not, you know, I knew the stress that was going to come. I didn't realize I would lose all my hair in fellowship and residency stress. But, you know, I had that sense. I know some people don't have those mentors. I had mentors and a lot of family members who are physicians. But I think I didn't, and Clinton will agree, you know, we didn't necessarily foresee all the changes in medicine, the EMRs, the bureaucracy, a lot of the checking off the boxes as opposed to patient care. So I think, and then none of us certainly could have foreseen COVID, which as an ID doc, you know, was quote unquote right up my alley, but, you know, was devastating, you know, for all involved, obviously. So I would say that, and as a physician, I have seen, you know, now I'm starting in July, I'll be starting my 15th year, which is crazy. I think Clinton's a couple years
before. Old man.
Yeah. But you know what? I think I used to say, well, I know that balance. I know me personally, I think I could use some help even finding that balance. For a long time, I felt just suck it up, you know, that quote unquote word, suck it up, and just kind of plow forward. But I understand that that is not necessarily everyone's avenue, or some people didn't realize what they're getting themselves into. Also, new medical graduates have enormous amounts of debt coming out. Which is why they may be not going to start prior practice, going for an employed model. Employed model has all their own stresses, et cetera. So it's a very complicated situation. I mean, Clinton, what do you think?
Yeah, I think most people go into medicine, they see it as a calling. So whether it's, you know, financial or just being compassionate, helping type of person. So I was excited when I graduated. But then that comes to a point where you're like, oh, what did I do? But and then I think for most people, you know, once you finish college and in medical school, it's kind of too late. You're already on that road and, you know, you've already sacrificed time and money. So a majority of people just see it out. And then they get to a point where they start doing clinical medicine and realize, you know, this is a lot. And they, you know, exodus to other things, unfortunately. Because, you know, I feel you mentioned compassion fatigue. You know, that's an interesting concept. It's like, you know, you're giving all yourself to patients and, you know, your service, you know, and you feel empty in your life, you know, when you have to do other things to do. So, you know, I think that's something that we don't address because, you know, nobody wants to leave medicine that, you know, it's in it. But it's like sometimes you just have to get out of it because you drive yourself crazy. So, you know, I think we need to start recognizing those symptoms earlier before people stop leaving, you know, clinical medicine. But sometimes clinical medicine is not for them, but
that's true.
We lose a lot of talent because the environment is just so toxic.
Yeah, and I'll just piggyback and say that, you know, some people, clinical medicine is not for them. Or there are other avenues, public health. You know, we need physicians to be in areas of legislative work and administration and leadership. So that's all very important. But I think
we need people like you, Logan, to, you know,
that's right.
We're all sitting in and just bathing in our stress and anxiety, and we don't know until somebody who is actually someone who's actually been in it to actually step outside and recognize it. So we're grateful for people like you to help us, because otherwise we'd all be doing something self-destructive or just leaving medicine in general. So
or just playing golf all day at the expense of your patients, like some nephrologists seem to be doing. Yeah.
Thank you for your kind words, but I think something that you guys touched on before in one of your podcasts was identity, and it's a big topic that comes up.
Yeah.
At least with nursing, I know with doctors, I mean, you guys get a fancy title that you get to show, and it's great. Like if I went to school for that long, I'd want to be called a doctor as well. And right. Then nurses also, they parade their badge around to everyone. And what I've noticed is if you identify too much with your career, you don't have anything else in your life, right? Because you're so identified. And for me, peeling away from the RN label that I was given after putting in a lot of work, it was really hard. And for a lot of my coworkers, they become so over-identified in the profession. They only spend time with nurses. They only talk about PICC lines and Foley catheters, and that's the life.
Or sodium or blood cultures, you know, you know, I equate it, and I tell people, if I ever thought about, I mean, thankfully I like what I do. I know it's stressful. No job is perfect. I mean, for now I can hack it, but because I really do enjoy it. But I almost equate it to like someone in the military then becoming a civilian, and all of a sudden, like, wait, now I'm a civilian, you know, because I'll admit it's a huge part of my identity. I mean, I do, you know, do lots of other things. Clinton does a lot of other things, you know, both family wise, socially, hobbies, what have you, but probably my biggest identity is, oh, I am a physician, you know, not because I want to brag about it, because it's just, I feel, you know, I think we all feel like it's a calling. It's not a job. It's a career. You know, it's a career. It's even more than a career. It's like who you are.
Right.
Your vocation. Yeah.
A vocation.
You start with it.
You know, so. I think
but you want to stay healthy. You don't want to lose, even if the balance is, you know, like a seesaw, it's like this, you don't want to go all the way like this. So, you know, I think, and like I said, we need more of this in medicine, because at least when we trained, there was a lot of like, you know, doctors don't cry type of thing. You know, you just, if you want a fellowship, if you want to do well, you just suck it up. You know, if you want to impress your attending, you don't go home, you stay up, even if you're, you know, you were up all night. You just, so, that's where we're at. You know, I mean, that's why this is so important and what you're doing is so important. But tell us.
I think it's similar to a lot of the other service professions. You mentioned the military, but like, you know, right. Policing, firemen, like that's your duty. It's your job is to help people.
Sure.
Mostly to the detriment of your own physical and mental self. So I think that's, you know, that's one of the gifts and the curse, right? Like you're going in to help people, but then what do you sacrifice? So. It's a tough thing.
Unfortunately, from my own perspective, I think the system kind of, not to like quote, oh, the system, F the system, but it plays on the compassion of the doctors and all the healthcare providers, yes. Because right. You guys are so compassionate and they just want money, so they can really just churn you.
You know, it's nurses, the most compassionate people I've met. I mean that, but there's an excellent article in the New York Times, because we both live in the New York tri-state area, maybe about a year ago. It basically said the business of medicine depends upon the empathy and hard work of doctors or nurses. I'm paraphrasing there, but you hit the nail on the head. It's basically, you know, the business side of medicine, of which doctors and nurses are far removed, people don't realize that, is, you know, dependent upon, well, those docs found their calling. They'll keep going no matter what we do, no matter how much we squeeze them. And that is what's really decreasing the longevity of a lot of doctors' careers, because it's dependent upon that we will just keep hacking it through because it's our calling. And, you know, we are privileged to be doctors, which we are, and nurses, and take care of people. But that doesn't mean that we need to do it at the extent of, you know, giving up all our family commitments and our physical and our lifestyle. I mean, you know, look at poor Clinton. Look at his poor posture. He's like all, you know, twisted. He works too much. And I mean, you know, exactly. He's not taking any time to do yoga over there or stretching. I'm looking for like 60 degrees. Poor guy's doing dialysis rounds all day long. You know,
the original background was a window, but this is not my office. This is the dialysis unit. Anyway, I kind of related to being a professional athlete, like basketball or football. You know, majority of your early life is dedicated to, you know, honing and expertise and training and things like that. And then, but once you get into the professional world, your life expectancy is, you know, 5-6 years. You know, football is 5-6 years, basketball is maybe 10-15 years. And then you retire and do something else. You think that's the future of medicine? Should we just accept it for what it is and work for 10 years and then have the younger people work for us and just that cycle? Or, you know, because I think we, you know, we probably use all our intellectual capital and, you know, spiritual capital and, you know, mental fortitude. It's all drained, and then we move on to something else. I think that's how it's been now. I don't know if that should be the future.
Yeah, I think the big problem is that our society, at least in the United States, is not investing in its people.
Yeah.
It's investing in the sickness of its people. And so when you do that, everything's going to fall apart. And the people who are most needed to repair the sick, if you see them as just cogs in your machine, then we're all screwed.
Yeah. Great point. No, right. How is it in Colombia, by the way?
I can't even imagine, because they're not paid even remotely close to what nurses are paid in the US, and they work worse hours. So yeah, it's a huge issue.
It's a global issue. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think the problem, Clinton, you know, you mentioned like just have a shorter career and do something else. Some people will argue that, well, your training is paid for by the government, where you get a stipend, but that's actually subsidized by the government. So then some people, just naysayers, or just to be a devil's, you know, advocate, will say, well, you know, you put all this time, energy, and effort into becoming a doctor. Most doctors don't start practicing until they're, let's say, early 30s in general, maybe even mid 30s if they took off and they did a fellowship. You know, it's hard. And then they come out with incredible amounts of debt, and they come out at a time where they may be getting married, they may have a partner, they may want to consider buying a house. Or I don't know that anyone could even if they wanted to, could really just say, I'm going to work 7 years. You know, you're not getting paid a NFL player's or NBA player's salary and then say, I'm just going to quit and do something else. So and there is something to be said about the older, wiser doctor with all the experience, right? So we need those, right? I mean, you're almost there. I mean, I know
you're there. You're the older, wiser guy.
Usually you have a lot more white, you know, so you're proud. And that you earn that, just like I earned my nice round head, you know, that looks like Vin Diesel. So at least in my own mind. But so I don't think that's the right, I mean, that's just my opinion. I don't think that's the right idea. Hey, just let's just work one decade and then call it quits. I think.
Did you call yourself the Indian Vin Diesel?
Or Jason Statham, you know what I mean? It's whatever you pick.
It's Statham?
Statham. Sorry. yeah, whichever one you want, you know what I mean?
You're more like the Indian George Costanza. I'm gonna go
ahead. The calls from Bollywood have not been as vigorous as they once were, but you know, they're still there. No, but looking to be honest, you know, that's I think why we're seeing an explosion of lifestyle and preventive medicine, and people saying we can't just focus on diabetes and end-stage kidney disease and high blood pressure and everything that comes along with it. You know, why not focus on preventive medicine? And you know, you're right. We're still slow to the system because someone can chop off a body part X or take out, you know, body part Y and get paid a significant amount. But you can talk about quitting smoking all day long and get paid nothing, you know? So shift the focus certainly to preventative and lifestyle medicine. I'm very happy to see, and we've had some lifestyle physicians on here very happy to see that this kind of explosion within healthcare and people finally recognizing we need to prevent diseases, not just treat diseases.
And I think the system is starting to catch on to doctors being burnt out, probably not in a altruistic way, but you see the entry of more mid-levels and nurse practitioners and PAs, I guess to help the physician, but I think you're going to see the same problem with that is the burnout and the high turnover. So I don't know if that solution is going to work.
I'm already seeing some of that where you'll see a PA doing one thing for, you know, 6 months, 8 months, kind of get tired of it, go to something else. I mean,
yeah.
And we know, I mean, like for instance, I'll just speak about the two of us. I mean, infectious disease and nephrology, we take care of a lot of very sick, chronically ill patients. And now you're seeing, at least the last several years, the amount of people applying for a fellowship dropping. So, you know, people don't, they're like, I don't want to deal with endless rounding in the hospital and dealing with really sick people. You know, I want to, that's why you see the explosion in the lifestyle medicine, whether it's radiology or dermatology or, you know, people doing medi spas, whatever it might be. So you're right that that burnout is going to be, because the population is only getting older, right? So you're going to only see more chronic medical conditions. So even more reason to prevent these diseases before they happen.
Or pay us more. I'm in need of a raise.
Well, the demand's going to go up because we're seeing a mass exodus. It's only begun. And unfortunately, like my job is to try and help people make decisions that align with what they really want to do and like kind of refocus on their dream. So helping people that way, I can only help so many people. And I think the real way the system's going to change is the mass exodus, which then causes an increase in demand and an increase in policymakers finally making some changes. But I think there's a huge increase in like the collective consciousness just shifting to more preventative medicine.
For sure. Tell us a little bit now about like, you know, social media, where people can find you, your social media handles, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, everything's pretty easy. Instagram, Healthcare Stress Relief, YouTube, Healthcare Stress Relief, and the website, healthcarestressrelief.com.
That's a great handle. How'd you get those? Like,
I just picked a name no one thought of before, I guess.
Yeah, right. No one thinks of Healthcare Stress Relief. That's
a good one. I mean, you would have thought that would be already taken up. So good for you. And tell us a little bit, I mean, how is life in Colombia? How's life living there? You said you were from LA, or sorry, from Southern California initially?
Northern California.
Yeah, how is it compared? I mean, and no, it's still a beach town, right? Or you're near the beach in Medellin?
I'm in the valley, actually.
Oh, you're in the valley. Okay, right.
Yeah, but it's gorgeous, just pure nature. That's my backyard. Oh, look at that. It's like a forest out here in the city. Beautiful place.
And amazing coffee, I have no doubt.
Yeah, the coffee here, though, is actually all of it goes to the U.S. and other countries. They export everything.
What about their other export? Do you want to comment? Do you want to comment on their formerly known export?
Come on. Colombia is a beautiful country. I will tell you, there's a place called Rey del Sol. I'll throw them a shout out. I forget what province they're from, but they are basically a family that owns a bunch of farmland in Colombia and basically grows and then exports the beans. And then they finally decide to open up a physical shop. And I stop by there every morning. I get a pan de bono, which is a Colombian cheese bread, and a cup of really strong Colombian coffee. And it is like my morning ritual. So, you know, the people are very warm and beautiful. So I, despite you know, the old saying that's the famous export, I think it's the people and the coffee and many other things. So, I mean, things are much better there, right? Politically, it's safe, it's stable. I know Medellin's a lot of tourists, I think, come down as well now.
Yeah, but if you look at the export problem, who is buying all of that stuff? Americans.
Yeah.
So Colombia gets a really bad rap. Like my girlfriend can't even really get into Australia because of that. Her passport is like, it's nothing to them, but it's hilarious because all the Australians are buying cocaine for like $300. No, you're right.
Yeah, I was joking. I haven't bought cocaine, you know, or would I ever?
That's not the type of stress relief we're talking about, my man.
Yes.
that's adrenaline increase, not stress relief. Yeah.
No, I think you seem very well grounded, and you're talking about, you know, spirituality and finding your journey. And I can appreciate it. In all seriousness, before we wrap up, I would say that, you know, a lot of physicians start off, you know, I started off very altruistic, and I still am. And I still have dreams of, like, you know, taking off and climbing Mount Everest and going to the mountains and all these things, and life gets in the way. But I think I realized, why wait till you're retired? You know, if you take these kind of breaks and these time to yourself now, you'll have a longer career. You'll have a better career. You'll be better for your patients. At the end of the day, you know, our dedication is to our patients. That's.
I just see you now. I just saw you now on the top of Mount Everest with a flagpole and your hair just blowing in the wind. Is that how you're dreaming?
I'd be wearing a parka, so my hair would be covered. You know, okay. So, I'd probably be wearing oxygen. I'm never going to make it to Everest. I'm well aware of that, but I'm hoping at one point to make it to Everest base. But I tell you, Logan, everything we're talking about today, you know, we peel back a bunch of layers, and I think we clearly established the problem, and we're happy to talk to you as offering a solution. So I hope any of our listeners out there will certainly check out Logan Trudell, you know, who's doing a very valuable service and a much needed service. And we really appreciate you coming on today. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you. Yeah. Just one thing I want to say about retiring. I don't plan to tire or do it again. So.
I like that. That's excellent. That's excellent. Well, Logan Trudell, thank you so much for coming on. This is a Recommend Daily Dose, Dr. Stuart Slugger, and my trusty sidekick, Dr. Clinton Coleman, who needs help with his posture. Please listen, rate, subscribe. Please check out Logan's social media handles and check and, you know, give him a call or contact him if you really feel that you need that he could help you, which I think he could help a lot of us out there. But until next time, please be well.